We have our topic tonight, and we have our presenter. We have resident, one of our resident photographers tonight, one of the Shutterbugs, and this is Mike. Mike is new to Fetish Men. How long it's been? About three?
Three or four months.
Yeah. And Mike and I have become friends. I met Mike before at the Mankind Project because his husband is a warrior, and so I've known Mike for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then just recently now since you start coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike is a trained
psychotherapist.
Yeah. And tonight he has a topic that he wants to share and have some discussion about. And so I want everybody to welcome Mike.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about this because I was really curious about objectification, sexual objectification, and then what goes on in the BDSM community, because for me, a lot of what BDSM is, objectification is kind of built into it, and I got curious because most people, like, not in the community, objectification is not a good thing or seen as a good thing. And, like, a lot of feminists got behind it, you know, saying they didn't want to be treated like objects or whatever. But in BDSM, it's really different. So I was curious about people's experiences, both good, bad, or neutral, with objectification within this community and outside, just to sort of get a sense of how is it different and how do we negotiate that here. So for me, I've had a range of experiences. One time I was at a club and a guy came up to me and he didn't really look at me. He looked at my crotch and said, you know, if you show me your cock, I will give you a bump of cocaine. And so I was like, you want to see my cock? And he's like, yeah. And that was pretty much the exchange. So, and I remember feeling kind of offended by that. That didn't feel so good. Go back to the same club and I'm dancing up on the podium and somebody thinks I'm a go-go dancer and is giving me a lot of positive attention, still being objectified, but that felt way different, you know, much better. So I thought maybe we could start by going around and if people have had experiences, positive, negative, neutral, if they could share them. But then we could bring it more specifically into the BDSM scene, kink scene, and look at how it's used or what are the issues in the scene.
I think
scene.
She's dramatically.
Hmm?
She's dramatically. I'm always telling music. Shit.
So what do you mean by objectification?
Okay.
Yeah, if you could put it in some context.
All right. Well, objectification is just reducing somebody to an object, so they're not really a person. And sexual objectification is just reducing them to a sexual object. So like a fetish.
Something
like that. So
he likes
shit.
He what?
What was that?
Nothing.
Never. It's not all that matters.
I heard it too.
Asking for him.
Hmm?
Are you asking for him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Objectification.
And everybody can speak up so we can get this.
Objectification. That was a hard word to say twice. I'm Jeff, you guys. And I'm getting very, very comfortable with you guys and trying to let my guard down a little bit. And being objectified, if you guys remember, at the very, very beginning, I don't know if we're at Pleasure of Treasures or here, but the topic was on what's the other words not coming to my head? Not different. It would be more of discrimination. But either way, the thing I've had the hardest time with is last year, I went on a date, and that's the hardest thing to do when you haven't done for a while. So all that excitement and nervousness and everything, I'm trying to hang on to that. But for anybody who doesn't know, I want to share it from a better light. I got there, and Ryan, handsome still, was not quite ready. So he handed me a beer, and that's all I remember other than at least 3 hours of being objectified. I had no arm control. I was looking around because Kobe's been wonderful, so has Papa Tommy in directing me to things, but Kobe's taken me under his wing. Certain things I have nightmares about, and my therapist said, what a better bunch of guys that you're going to. They know all about limits and boundaries, and probably, if anyone's into it, they would still think it was pretty fucked up. That was not on your anything agenda.
Because it wasn't consensual. Yeah.
And so I wasn't even there. I wasn't even a person anymore. I had a ball gag. I was strapped down, bent over something that didn't break my ribs or anything. But I guess it was GHB or something, but I kept sort of being here and there. And I could hear them doing smoking meth, talking, and I swear it kept changing people. So it took me a while to think maybe he put it on Craigslist, and people were coming over from the Palm Springs, whatever club, that was directly across the street. But either way, it wasn't really a list of items or anything they wanted to do. It wasn't sexual. It was more like get high, and then they just did whatever they wanted. And I've got a great sense of humor, but before I could spit it out when I got back to San Diego, I was just saying to a friend, the first one that I even shared any of the details with, that I said it was a pretty scary Houdini trick, but they let me know when the light bulb was going in, and to not move because it will slip out of their fingers. And I somehow let everything just relax. And they were done. So they said, well, too bad the other two didn't. We weren't able to do that. And I joked with my friend Kathleen, yeah, I'm going to get a tattoo that says GE approved. And one guy pissed in me. One guy, I know they put a little dog tail on, so I'd love to experience that on purpose. I'd like to pet people. And I'm facing everything because what they liked, I feel the most, is having duped someone who was innocent or not, because anything they did, probably there's somebody on Craigslist. But the fifth thing, and I had a problem with it at Kobe's, whatever, and he wanted me to get past it. He said, do you want to help? And I said, no, I can't do that to you. Anyways, when it was happening to me, and I still was just gagged and everything, and everything just hurt. I can't explain it, but including emotionally, I was going on a fucking date. And I didn't think I was going to live that night, but when it got to the fist, the guy was behind me, pounding on my back, one slapping my back. And he goes, Robert, he had three fingers. I think he was holding it this way. He goes, Rogan, it's going in one way or the other, so you just better relax. Come on, Rogan, you can take it. And at whatever point, when it went in, it was a punch. And I left my body. I prayed to God, my mom and sister. I was so not part of my body. I'll be gone. And I think for the rest of it, it went on for another while, but it was almost like it was just happening. I was numb to whatever. And
do you mind?
They had the weirdest things, so I'm sorry. But
No.
They had the weirdest things that weren't really toys. It was just like the back handle of a dustpan. Whatever it was not even degrading, it was dehumanizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think I was going to live, but all of a sudden, at one point, somebody's cell phone rang. And all of a sudden, some straps were pulled. And I was like that, this one. And a different dude says, we got to split, so clean yourself up and get the fuck out of here. And he threw me a towel. And on the ground were my cute underwear that I put on purpose, just in case, like Mama always says.
Mm.
My mom used to always say, in case you get laid, wear cute underwear. Anyways, I'm joking. I don't remember, but I called a cab. I got home to my apartment. I checked that my cat was okay. And scooped out her poop, fed her. And this was in the shower until morning. It just never happened after that, until I got here. So I'm working through it, and really nicely, I think. So I just want to share that sometimes your greatest fears open doors. Because I started wanting to know, how dare, what were those fuckers thinking? What are they into?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the whole thing with me, it was more exciting because they had a rodent or a Thanksgiving turkey or whatever that didn't want it. And I appreciate you guys because sometimes you freaked me out. And when they got to the part of polyamorous and all that, I can't even keep one boyfriend right now. But I have 11-year one, 3-year one. My issues are love and trust.
Well, Jeff, I want to acknowledge you for, you know, sharing your heart and that experience with us, with me, and whoever the fuck did that, you know, that's like the worst extreme, you know, when I'm listening to it, you know, it's beyond, like you said, objectification, and that's just, you know, really cruel that people are out there, but there are people out there who just are fucking crazy, you know, and for you to have bounced back and, you know, come to this group and let all of us support you and love you. And I saw you at the play party, too, and it like you were having a good time. From what you just told me now to seeing you last Saturday, it's almost like a 180, and I know you got a lot of work to do.
If I feel safe, yeah. I got lit on fire.
And I do, too. Life. Yeah, and I want to say you're not alone. You know,
I was the mummy because I'm a small grower, not shower. So when it's roses, it's good.
But I'm a grower too. Yeah, yeah.
I'm a statue of David without muscles. Of course. But when it's happy, it's happy. But
yeah.
This whole room of people, I feel very safe with. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you can see so many. I was one of the mummies, yeah. And Kobe just had to rip out my little.
I was the other one.
Okay, anyways, we're moving a little bit away, but no, not at all. Thank you for sharing that with us and trusting us to hear it. Actually, your experience is exactly what objectification is, sexual objectification in sort of the most extreme sense. And so, I mean, I'm just curious what other people's thoughts are.
That's exactly. If you treat somebody, treat a human being like they're a piece of meat, that's objectification. That's, you said an extreme situation. That's criminal behavior, and they should be caught and punished. But I don't know about that. Anyway, it doesn't have to be that extreme either. It can be
right. Just
a lot of things. I mean, I know in my... In my history, one thing that comes to mind is I dated a lot of black men. And black men get kind of freaked out about it because it's like, oh, you're one of those guys that objectify me and just see me as a black man and not as a human being. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, no, I've dated a lot of black men. I'm way over that. But But that would be a case of you guys, you two, man, could speak to that more than I could. But, I mean, there are definitely people who will objectify you in a lot of different ways. And that's one of them. And I've done it, too, just in role-playing. I think role-playing is really more of what maybe you're getting at. And role-playing can be fun. It can be a fun thing. You just put somebody in a certain, they're a sex object. And they want to be a sex object, right? And that's the good part.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The difference is that it's negotiated, it's what they want, it's been expressed verbally, and there's an understanding that that's what we want here, and this will be fun, and right. When the scene's over, bring it back.
Right.
And that would be really important for me. Because I can do that and have fun with that.
Yeah.
But I would never just do that, out in public to somebody or treat them as less than a human being in any other context unless it was desired and it was consensual.
Well, that's kind of the line that I wanted to explore, though, because it's, without putting a judgment on it, good or bad, it has a negative connotation outside of the scene, and in the scene it means something different to us. But I'm also curious about boundaries and whether people in the scene can have experiences like the one Jeff brought in, and still be within the BDSM scene. But one person, when I was doing a little bit of research on this, hedonism kept coming up, and pleasure for the sake of pleasure. And it was interesting because it was the goal is just your pleasure. There's no higher goal. But then I was thinking about, well, what about the person you're with? I guess if they're the same as you, then where do you guys meet? How do you negotiate that? right. You can. But I guess also, there can be times where one person goes beyond, maybe, in the scene, beyond the negotiation. And so what I don't want this to be is sort of a buzzkill on creativity and scenes and everything. I was really looking for an exploration of just people's experiences with it. And,
I think if I understand objectification, I don't think all of us have a consistent understanding, but I think it is beginning much, much earlier in the process now that there's online. I think effectively you're an object once you put a profile up there, whether you want it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're now forced to say, what are your preferences? What do you like? What don't you like? When I look at you, I got to say, what do I like? What don't I like? Right. I like what you like.
Right.
So I think we're brought into that world much earlier than we were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're selling yourself like a product.
Yeah, well, you're doing it to yourself, exactly. You're marketing yourself, you're looking at how other people are marketing them, and you're pretty unforgiving. And so I think we've become, in the online world, much, much better at not treating people as humans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying as a group, I'm not speaking of anybody in particular, but I believe we've become much better at that skill, whether or not we wanted to. We're really good at just blowing people off and not responding. I mean, if somebody walked up to me on the street and said hello, I'm not going to not say hello.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're getting there, whether we like it or not.
Right. I think that is a great point, and it just made me think about, it's not just other people, it's how we can self-objectify or objectify ourselves. And I'm curious about, you said the online, it's sort of getting worse or since the online profiles, but I'm wondering if it existed even before that.
Yes.
Just not in that context, but yeah.
Sure.
Back in the 80s, through Drummer Magazine, was an ad, and
you had to submit a letter to Drummer with a number, and then the letters got forwarded to that person. And there was a guy in Texas who wanted to be a slave, and I was into finding something like that, exploring that part of my sexuality. He came up for a weekend, we met. We'd actually had to have one or two phone conversations because he then sent me a letter with his phone number, and then I picked him up, he took a bus. We spent 3 or 4 days together, and then he definitely wanted to move from Texas up to Kansas to be with me. And he came up, and we were together a year. And the problem was that he was a gifted artist, bright guy. He did not graduate from high school. He got a GED. He had low self-esteem, but he was a sweet, bright, bright guy, talented guy. But he wanted to be a slave. He wanted to be a servant. He wanted to be called a piece of shit. And as a theater person, I can get into that role play so quickly.
Right.
Yes, you
can. But the problem was that as I kept trying to, in a sense, please him, and it was exciting to me, and when he wanted to so much be beaten with a belt, it was a release for me. If I was stressed with school and things going on, he became my release, and I could, and he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really more and more said, this is a really wonderful human being, and to call him a piece of shit, and what's wrong with me to be doing that to this person? And yet, he loved that. He wanted that. He thrived on it. So I think there are people that are true masochists.
Mm-hmm.
And if they really get into being an object, and that's where they get their great joy, that's where they get, for whatever reason, their great joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to belittle them and say, that's weird, you're messed up.
Mm-hmm.
It is who they are.
Yep.
But eventually it ended because, one, he couldn't stop smoking. I promised he'd never smoke in the house, and I got him smoking in the house. And I said, you know, I could be Mr. Nice Guy and say, well, it's okay, but these were the rules.
Mm-hmm.
One of the strict, dominant,
mm-hmm.
master, whatever, and bye-bye.
Yep.
But again, so, and what I'd say to some people when they say to me online, whatever, I want to be treated like a piece of shit, it's like, well, what does that say about me? That I'm such a bad person that all I can get is a piece of shit to be with?
Mm-hmm.
I want a wonderful human being who wants to be loving and caring. I want a boy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a piece of shit to be going out to have dinner with. So,
you know, it's interesting, though. Oh, and then, Daddy, it's sort of like this is the perfect community for that, though, because as well as you have somebody that might be a pure masochist, you will have somebody that will be a pure sadistic, and they'll meet, and that'll be a match made in heaven for the two of them. But then it also sounds like there are times where the scene conflicts with who you are as a person. Like, yeah, maybe it goes a little bit too far, and then what do you do? You know, what does that look like? So,
well,
I'm sorry. Did you want
to? I was like Enrica. I tell people, you know, I'm not just a sir. I'm not a master. I'm also can be a sir, but I'm also a big daddy. So you get it all with me. And
mm-hmm.
if you're only looking for a master, sorry, move on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to just be compartmentalized and just be a master.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to also be a loving, nurturing, caring daddy as well.
Yeah.
You'll be safe with.
Well, and I think sometimes a lot of that, it has to do with the role play. And like he was saying about, you know, if two people get together and this is the scene they want,
yeah.
and they agree to this, agree to that, and whatever. And it's like we talked before about, I'm not dominant, I'm not submissive, I'm the daddy and the boss. Okay? I have friends that are dominant and they're friggin' assholes, you know? That's not me. And that may be why I'm not that way, because I see them and I'm like, I don't
right.
want to be that way. They're my friends and I love them.
Right.
But going back to the thing, it's all about whatever the thing is. My ex and I had a three-way one time with someone, and this guy came over, he really wanted to be dominated. And I acted
And I did it, and my ex was like, wow, that was, who are you? and so I, you know, so, but it was an act, you know, and I can be a mean motherfucker when I'm acting, but it's not me. It's not my 24, 7 day a week, right. 365 thing.
Right.
So I think people look to that. And it's funny, good or bad, right or wrong, during the separation of my ex, I became Craigslist Daddy of the Year in the Temecula Riverside area. and I had a blast. I've mentioned this once before. But it was all about, in the way I advertised it, is you have a, there's something in you. There's something that you've always seen, a fantasy that you always wanted to do, bring it.
Right.
I is two consenting adults, so I can do it. You know, I'm an actor. I can do this. And one was simple as a guy wanted. You know, he got a parking ticket, and I was in my, he wanted me in my police uniform. I met him at the door. He had a ticket. How do I get out of this? And so we started from there. Then I ran across. I tore up the ticket at the very end. and this is no. I don't mean to offend anybody, but there's some that just. That I just can't do. There was a black man who contacted me, and we went back and forth, and he wanted me to be a plantation owner, and he wanted to be the black slave. And we went back and forth and talked about this for a while, and I just, that was just something, and I finally told him, I said, you know, I just can't do that. I said, that just sounds just too weird for me. I said, I don't know how to be a plantation owner anyway. I'm not comfortable with that.
But if you got a parking ticket.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, the objectivity is, to me, was they wanted something, they needed something, and I don't think it was something they read the Craigslist ad and they thought, I think it's something, because I still have, at 56, I still have scenes, fantasies in my head that I still keep hoping will happen.
Yeah.
So my point about the dominant thing was, I have a problem when I love someone.
Yeah.
I can't be a dominant fucking asshole.
Yeah.
I just can't. Maybe at the very beginning I can.
Yeah.
But then once I get to know them, I start falling in love with them. I can't do that.
Yep.
I can't do that.
Exactly.
But bring someone over and I could sure, you know, put on the hat.
Turn it on.
These guys haven't seen that. Wow, what the fuck is that shit? But I think it's all about, you know, meeting, or not expectations, that's the word, but agreeing to meet and make that thing go away. And I, like I said, I mentioned one time before with some of the bi guys coming over. There wasn't sex, but I put them in a harness and chaps, and they looked in the mirror and they were like, wow, you know. So my thing with that is, when they're 56 years old, something's going to pop in their head and they're going to remember me for having done that. And to me, that's better than coming all day long. So.
Well, that's a great point, and one of the things it makes me think about is the difference between people who live the scene and people who act it, right? And I'm a little bit unclear on exactly what that looks like. I know I've heard some people say online that they live this, and then in the group, what it seems to me like we've been doing is learning how to create really satisfying scenes and understand, you know, how to treat your partner with respect and just all the different boundaries and rules. So, I don't know if anyone else is...
Yeah, you know, from my viewpoint, it's stripping away the ego.
Okay.
You're objectifying yourself, you're
right.
You know, allowing yourself to get rid of your identity as a upstanding citizen and, you know, perfectionist and doing, you know, that's in letting go.
Okay.
And for me to get to that state of mind, it's really difficult. to objectify myself and let myself get there. But when I do get there, it's liberating. And I think it's just getting stripping away the layers.
My experience is guys growl away the savings to you say, you're punching the face. They want to be punching the face.
I never did that.
Okay.
I mean, because he knows I'll slap. Yes. He says it. Yes. He says it anyway.
Right.
So
right.
I have to slap.
Okay.
Well, I never hit him with my fist though.
Okay.
Because he wasn't into that. But most guys are into fists.
All right.
So.
Lee, and then.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of lived the scene since like I was six. I've always been submissive, and really young age, it's okay. You know, you're just seen as the shy guy. But I was more than that. I wanted to be told what to do. I wanted to please people. And I always, even to this day, I get satisfaction just by offering pleasure to somebody else. It makes me feel good. You know, I may not have the orgasm, but if he does, goal achieved. As I got older, I got put into the faggot box because I started to. And we're talking before I even knew.
Okay.
It was faggot box because I was more effeminate, I was shyer, I was quieter, I was always trying to help out. I wasn't doing crap like playing football or basketball or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'd be delivering the water bottles and the towels to the sports guys, you know, or I was helping a really hot Asian, or not Asian, but an Italian guy with his speech because he had a really bad accent. Just because, you know, he needed help, and I could see he was struggling with it. And I got treated very poorly, and I ended up in Central California at a little podunk high school, and that box got really confined. And it didn't matter how good my grades are or what I was academically, you know, it didn't matter that I could run track, it didn't matter that I was very athletic in many ways, and it didn't matter that I was attractive, I was a faggot. And I was stuck in that. And I was physically and emotionally abused for years.
Mm-hmm.
My self-esteem was ripped out of me. My humanity was basically eroded. And suicide attempted several times through those years. After I left high school and went to a community college, I expected the same. I didn't get it, but I expected it. I lived with the saying, you're ugly, you're stupid, you're a waste of skin, you should die, you should kill yourself, you know, do us all a favor and go away. But nobody was saying it, but nobody was saying anything in the other direction either, saying, you know, trying to help me get out of that box. But I still had that submissive desire to please. I love being touched, and I love sex.
Lee, hold on. Can I ask you for a clarification? Because
sure.
It sounds almost like you're saying submissive is the same as accepting the abuse that you were accepting. Because you started off talking about one. So
it's all ingredients in the same big pot. I do like being given directions and told how to do things and what to do. And could you please go fetch me that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, hey, I'd like it if you would do this, or could you massage my feet, you know, and if it's grody feet, I don't want to touch them, but I will anyway, you know, shave my back, oh God.
Yes.
And that's submissive.
But it seems that, you know, maybe I don't want to do, but I'll do them because I know it'll make somebody happy. I currently have roommates that haven't paid rent in over a year. I'm driving myself broke, keeping everybody fed and, you know, the roof over their head and stuff like that. Because as a person I am, I know they're trying very hard, and I'm trying to give them, you know, every opportunity, and I can, so I offer and I help them out.
Well, that sounds very different than faggot and in that box.
We just jumped 20 years, so.
So I just want to be clear. So they're not related. I guess. Are you linking them, or?
They seem
it seems like you were talking about when it got to the, like not about your satisfaction in pleasing, but about other people.
Because of who I was, I was being objectified. I was being reduced to the lowest common denominator as faggot. Oh. And faggot is evil, faggot is going to burn in hell. Punching bag, you know, this is the guy that, you know, deserves pain. This is the guy that we're going to throw rocks and nails at. Mm-hmm. This is the guy that we're going to, you know, shove the lockers and, you know, cars pull over on the side of the road and flashing come out and beat shit out of me. I lived with that. I felt like I was being put in this box.
But that wasn't necessarily what you were looking for, is that correct?
No, it was not what I was looking for.
Okay. Right.
My intrinsic nature is what I associate as a submissive. And that stayed with me the entire time. It wasn't until I started getting away from that. And then there's a whole story of you know, diving into sex to find acceptance, all that great stuff, to try to burst myself out of that bubble. Going to college and then, you know, over time, healing has progressed. And then I came to San Diego, and thank God I did. I found friends here that were, they call themselves kinky. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? They're like, oh, well, they were doing the whole, you're the outsider thing, we don't want to scare you. And, you know, eventually after some talks, I got them talking about, you know, how they like to tie people up or flog them or things like that. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. Doesn't that hurt? And lo and behold, it was Pride of 2012, and they convinced me to go to the Leather Room. And I got a cane. And it wasn't the greatest experience, but it didn't hurt. And actually, afterwards, it kind of felt nice, the healing part of it. And the Club X had done the paddle to, you know, their paddles and showed me the proper way to get myself and, you know, I had others, and I said that was great because I loved the burn and everything like that. I was like, no, this might be something I might be interested in. And between Pride of 12 and Pride of 13, I went to a couple beat and greets and experienced flogging.
All right. Look at that face.
That's a pretty big smile.
So it looked like it went from what it was earlier to where you got some nurturing and some attention and some care.
There are actually people out there that I don't know if you guys think I'm ugly or fat or stupid or waste of skin. All I know is that you accept me. And when I was at that play party walking around with nothing but my birthday suit and I didn't hear any, you know, it made me feel really good about myself. And that's the type of positive reinforcement I never had gotten before. So I think that there is a direct correlation between, I guess you could call it the normal world, and the treatment I've been getting for more years than I can count for the type of person I am. Submissive people, you know, friends eventually end up walking all over me, taking advantage of me because I won't say no. I don't get in their face when they haven't paid me back that $20, you know, and so they never pay me back. And
Right, so they let it go.
And we're going to take one more and then we're going to take a break.
Okay. Yeah, I think that it's all about respect, and they don't respect you, clearly.
Yeah,
and the people in your childhood did not respect you, they demean. In reality, whereas in the DNS SNM, you can be demeaned in play, and it's still respecting you as a person, and that's the difference.
And it's consensual. It's consensual.
It's like kids getting guns and
stuff. I've seen guys getting brutally flogged, who afterwards were just lit up like a Christmas tree. I saw Alex getting stomped on and kicked around and laughing and just groaning and barking and he was just totally into it and then got up in the sling and got himself fucked, you know, and he had the biggest smile on his face for the rest of the night. And I asked him about that and he's like, oh yeah,
Well, okay.
I mean,
real quick,
okay. Who is coming from right. A point of love, and so that's it's just great to know that I can be who I am. Mm-hmm. I can explore what it means to be this way and get the rest of the kinky interests that I have floating out there, you know, into me. So
in a safe context.
In a safe context.
And I want to talk to you, but for Daddy says, for anybody in here that is submissive, there's a difference between being submissive and used and abused.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You say you're submissive, that's great, but there's a lot of used and a lot of abused in there, and that's not part of being submissive. So I'd like to talk to you about that and help you straighten it out. But anybody in here, if you're submissive, no. Abused and used is not part of being submissive. Ever, never, not going to happen. If that is in the situation you're in, you need to get a hold of myself, Sir Magnus, or somebody in here, and let us help you find that fine line between there. Because submissive does not mean he's my submissive pup. I don't abuse him, and I don't use him. Even if I didn't love him, and he's just a playmate or whatever. No, submissive does not mean abused, and doesn't mean used. That's not part of being submissive at all. Go get me a soda. Okay, I'm not using him. He's being submissive and doing what I'm telling him to do. But for me to call him names that degrade him or like physically slap him, hit him, whatever, no, that's abuse.
Let's just put a pause on it and then we'll take a break. This is, seems like a good discussion we could pick up on. Let's take 10.
Okay.
All right.
You're the boundary keeper.
I'm the boundary.
You'll tell us when to come back.
Yeah.
A little bit more clear for me is that there the real difference between people who live it and don't, and then does living it mean being a dick or being abusive or, right? So that you can live it. Can you be a sadist and not be an asshole, basically, you know?
Yes.
Right?
So, like, for me, like, yeah, living it is about, for example, like, living leather.
Yeah.
It's about brotherhood, okay. Community, yeah. And connection, and, you know, authenticity.
Yep.
But it's not living in a scene 24/7.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah.
Like I can't be I can't do that.
Yeah.
Be in this like rigid role and like this idea, this archetype of like a master who's supposed to be a dick. And, you know,
right.
Like, but like the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't be in a rigid place like that. So for me it's a scene. Yeah, it's just a scene. It's this set amount of time, and then I can pull away from that.
Pull out.
Me and,
okay.
And I'm versatile anyway.
Okay.
So I don't like to be locked into anything, one thing anyway.
Right.
Like,
right.
I can be a sir in this scene, and then I can go be a boy in this scene,
okay.
And I can do that, and I'm good with that. So there's that layer for me, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
the hands
of
the person. Yes. Oh, go you. You have something to say?
Yeah. Like I discovered I was a daddy when I was 32. My partner became my partner. She was 1980. He was into the leather scene. He dressed in leather, had chaps and everything. Went out to leather bars. He taught me I have nothing to do with leather. And I just discovered within this past couple of years that I've been a daddy for 32 years and didn't even realize that's what it was. I was never really involved in this scene, but we had a sling at home. We had all kinds of toys. You know, I'd put him up in the sling. I'd play with his butt forever. We had just a wonderful, we'd have threesomes, but was never into the flogging, never into spanking. I never even realized I was a daddy. You know, and then as I was getting, I just broke up with my third partner. My third partner wasn't into that scene at all. He was completely vanilla. My second one was vanilla, except he let me teach him how to fuck, fist fuck him, and that's really basically all we did. But I had three relationships. One was for 10 years, one was for 6 years, and those two died from AIDS. And the last one was 13 years, and I was their daddy all the time, every single one of them.
So what do you mean? Like, because I guess I'm not sure what daddy means to you.
Well, a daddy is someone who raises a young boy. The first one was 10 years younger, and the second one was 15 younger, and the third one was 30 years younger.
Okay.
And I raised them from not even having GEDs up until becoming something in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of it, and they were part of my life. There was no sir, there was no waiting on anybody. We were full partners, except it was much more in a daddy role, like a daddy. A daddy is not necessary, at least when I grew up. My daddy didn't boss me around. He didn't ever hit me.
Mm.
He was always warm and affectionate to me. I guess maybe that's why I see that's what a daddy is, and that's what I am in a relationship. Now as I've gotten older, you know, now I'm alone, I said, you know, I've got to go out and find somebody. And there are people out there who are looking for daddies.
Mm-hmm.
I came to that realization. And I keep finding them. Some of them just want to role play daddy. And I've had several come over to my house. We just role play by being a daddy. And occasionally they want to spank them. Now, I don't get anything. I don't get off on spanking somebody. I don't get off on flogging somebody. If that's what they get off on, I enjoy doing that. If they want to learn about that, then I want to learn about it so that I can help them as a daddy learn that that's a sport that they want to learn how to participate in and do it happily and enjoy it. So, I mean, that's kind of how it is. And I've never worn leather until within this past year. I got a leather vest and, you know, so I can kind of fit in. And I love it. I mean, I love this group.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. It's kind of a tribal thing, like Papa Tony said. So, but it's just very natural. It's not anything artificial. So I don't even know if I really consider myself letter or fetishy. I don't know.
Okay. All right, John.
Well, I just want to say that living it, I think, can have different layers. I don't think it's necessarily either. You know, I think sometimes we try to get too black and white, like, well, I live leather or I don't live leather or whatever. And I think that there can be degrees of that, too, because Nikita always calls Daddy Ron Daddy. That's Daddy for him, but he's also his partner.
Okay.
You know, I always call him Dad.
Okay.
I have another partner though up north, but even when I'm up north, this is still Dad.
Okay.
So you know, it can be to varying degrees, and you know, and there's some lovable objectification there,
okay.
I guess, because this is my objectified father figure.
Right.
Not only does he meet the parental needs, there's also the other fun stuff that comes along with that sexually and also with the submission and things like that. And, you know, I guess that would be a good example of positive objectification because he sees me as his boy and I see him as my dad. So, you know, I think that that's our level of living.
Okay.
You know, I don't, when I go home to my partner, you know, my partner even refers to him as Dad Ron.
Okay.
So, you know, even though he's not his dad, but he knows that that's how I refer to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we live it. It's kind of an unusual situation, but I think that's kind of a positive example of the objectification because there's dad and boy and pup and all that. So.
Wonderfully said.
Ariel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll keep it short. It's basically there's a time and a place for everything. So basically, if you're gonna play the role of something, that's the time and place when you're with that partner or person. But you can't really keep that going on in your real life because then that doesn't translate the same way. Like, say, just throwing out there, but you're like, that's your boss. They'd be like, why are you being that demanding? It's inappropriate.
Right.
But in terms of it, just being in the subtext, where it is, the context.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it's just fine. But when you start pulling it out of context, then that's where it can either be an issue for yourself and for other people.
Great point.
I'm just curious because, again, this is new to me, but I'm not new to life. And there's certain things that we expose ourselves to or we experience, but if anybody remembers out or not, but a high school gym dance, and you're there, and you're just kind of like, the play party, I mean, you kind of imagine what it'd be like, oh, he's kind of hot, but I can't do that. At the play party, I was just kind of curious because I don't know how things work, but yes, we all have a certain What is the topic?
Objectification.
Objectify, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, these boys, I thought for sure they were going to start barking.
They were going to start barking.
I
learned
how puppy play was.
Uh-huh.
And I thought these two boys would be open to just doing what they're doing. Those two, I think, would be incredible to experience their love mm-hmm. and how they share that.
So that's a little bit of sexual objectification going on.
Boss just sat down, so I probably shouldn't say too much
objectification. There's one thing that I'm curious about along this line, too. Do you think that men just objectify sexually in general? Just how men are, very visual, and is that just a part of our makeup, whether we're in the scene or not? And so is there anything we can do about it even?
I actually didn't get to finish because the one thing I think is so odd, if you go on Craigslist,
mm-hmm.
everybody's either bi, looking for an experience, or bi, I need dick up my ass, I'm bi, I'm married.
Right.
And the other ones are all, they're just desperate. It's all pictures of that. And then, and the reason I go on these is to try to understand things, but Craigslist mm-hmm. is who I met, how I met,
mm-hmm.
whatchamacallit. But Grindr, I feel like this is more recon-ish, but there's still, it's all a playground. I mean, we're just kind of sort of recreating who's good at what and who isn't at what. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's still not right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have never said, ooh, you guys.
All right. Okay. David?
Yeah, I think there's like two types of objectifying. The one is the role-playing that we've been talking about. And then the other type of objectifying is the looksism.
Is the...
The looksism.
Okay.
Judging people by their looks.
Okay.
And your question is, do men do this? Well,
yeah.
It's prevalent in society.
Yeah.
Pick up any magazine, look at any advertising, it's all around you because the powers that be are creating consumer slaves.
Hmm.
And this is where our sexuality comes from.
Can you make that less abstract and more...
well...
Grindr.
I see.
Yeah.
Just anything, really.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but here's the thing about it. It's an awful, nasty thing when it works against you, but when it works for you, you like it.
Right.
If I can be the object of somebody's attraction who I find hot,
right,
then, you know, it's working for me.
Yep.
But, you know, if I'm turned down because of this looksism, this, you know, this consumer mentality that judges everything by, you know, a standard, an ideal standard. Everybody has to look like this, you know,
mm-hmm.
supermodel. And if I can benefit from it, you know, I'm all for it. But if I get turned down and treated like garbage, which you do a lot in this community,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would just... Jesus. I mean,
in all communities, I would say.
If I could bring it down to a reality for me, because like I couldn't take bathhouses anymore myself. I just couldn't handle the horrible, awful way that people would reject you.
Mm.
Like it was just like a horrible like feeling, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'd put my hand on somebody's knee thinking I would be like, this is so
okay, let's not reenact the trauma here.
No, the way people would just turn and look at you and go,
yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, that would be like, whoa!
Right.
You know, like all of a sudden I'm the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I know I don't look like, you know, Brad Pitt, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not that bad. And it was just, it would be like, oh, I can't put myself in those environments because gay men can be so cruel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the mean kid on the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to say, some of the biggest sadists who use objects are teachers.
Hmm.
And One of the biggest sadists I ever known in my life was a female art teacher who every day sent students crying to the office because of the way she belittled them, and yet she would tell us at lunch how she went to church every Wednesday night, and she went to church on Sunday and Sunday night, and the most unchristian, biggest, sadistic bitch
I just wanted to say that objectification is everywhere. It just depends on how you choose to act upon it, whether you take it to the next level or not. I mean, you see somebody down the road or you see somebody in front of you and you're going to objectify them. You're going to, in your mind, you're going to say, oh, that person's hot. Whether you say it out loud is a different story. I will give you an experience. One of the first times I ever went to a bar when I was barely 21, I went to Numbers with a couple of friends. And I walked to the bar for the first time, never ever had been there before, and had the worst experience of my life in that bar. And it took me many, many years to go back into that bar. Because when I was there at the bar, this guy came up behind me that I didn't even know and totally put his hands down my pants. I didn't ask for it. And it was just like, how dare you touch me there? It's like, I don't know you from anybody. So it was just like, it really, really upset me, and it really, really like freaked me out. And I mean, I didn't go to the bar for that. I went to the bar to hang out with my friends. And
right.
It was just really, really weird. And I had an experience over the weekend when we went to LA Pride. Me and Anthony were into the diaper thing, and we were walking around where the bars are, and we were sitting on the side of the road, and we were in our diapers, and people were walking around in underwear and less than that, and it was all good. But it was just like people would walk by and grab my butt. Did I ask for you to grab my butt?
No.
But
right.
It made me feel weird.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Feel good.
I have a story where something unexpected went wrong. It was a little over a year ago, and I connected up with somebody online who it wasn't a kink site, but they started to delve into the whole thing, and I said, well, we can do what you want to do. I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this. I did the sub roll. He did the dom roll, and he'd never done it before, and he went far, and I let him because I've had enough experience to know when there's trouble and when there's not trouble. So I let him go real far. The problem was then the lights came up and he saw what he did, and I had to spend a half hour fixing him because I said, it's fine. I'll be fine. No problem. I would have stopped you.
Yeah.
He said, yeah. He said, but I really liked it, and now I'm fucked up because I really liked it. And so it was the reverse of the way you think these things should go. And I probably spent 20 minutes in the parking lot trying to calm him down. Because he was just, look what I've done. Like,
what did he do?
Well, and I was really, really welted up and red. And I mean, it was, he just couldn't see himself doing that. Yet he did it.
Huh.
And he got excited. And normally on a site where you're in kind of in the community, you don't worry about the other side getting all, holy crap, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
So I've never expected it. I've never experienced somebody who basically was so new to the scene and then did something and then felt horrific guilt after it. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of from kneecap to chest, just really, really welted up bad. He was getting into it, I was getting into it, but the lights weren't up. So, right, so he was like, well, this was all fun. Then the lights on, he's like, holy crap. And so this whole thing where he didn't really understand what objectification was when he was having all of his fun. And then,
oh, it sounds like he understood quite well, actually. Because what I'm hearing from you is that because you were experienced, what happened went fine for you.
I was
but
fine.
Had you not been, do you think that would have been a situation where there's this person going way too far and...
He would have stopped. I could have stopped it and he would have stopped. I didn't. Because I'm like, I can deal with this. So I didn't. So he went... It's odd to say that there are occasionally inexperienced, pops, doms, sadists, call it what you want, that also have limits they don't understand themselves.
Right.
And then kind of have to live with a part of their personality they didn't know they had until that moment.
Right.
And so I'm just making the case to the other side that there are places we go when we get into this objectification, which are kind of the twilight zone for both sides.
Not intentional.
I don't really have any other point other than that, but other than it's an exploration for both, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Lee.
Yeah, I've had some rather interesting experiences with online objectification. My friends have, I work a lot, so I don't have much of a social life. So my friends have been trying for years to get me to go out there, so they've had me open, you know, OkCupid profiles and other profiles on the dating sites. And not necessarily the Adam for Adam where, you know, you hook up, but some places that are a little bit tamer than me, you might get dates. And I've sent messages out, you know, online I'm a lot more liberal with my speech. And I'm much easier to talk. And I get ignored, or I get not interested, or I'd have people look over my profile, no big deal. And I was on a forum one time, and I don't remember what the topic was, but I found this guy that was actually really smart, intelligent, and so I started messaging him privately, and we found out we're both in San Diego, and you know, we're both gay, and he's ex-military, and so we moved it to email, and we started emailing. So weeks go by, and we have, you know, getting this really strong connection, and you know, we're really excited. We want to meet each other. You know, we're thinking, hey, we can go out to this dinner here. You know, it's going to be great. Let me just schedule it at work. You know, okay. Oh, by the way, so what do you look like? And he sends pictures of himself. I'm like, hey, you're really attractive. You know, and so it's like, okay, here's mine. That's it.
No response back?
Nothing after that. No matter the connection that was there, he objectified me. My entire personality was thrown out the window because I wasn't an ex-military or whatever his type is. And that hurt. It's like, yeah, maybe we couldn't date if I'm not your type, but we could be friends. We obviously get along fantastic. We spent hours and hours and hours and hours on these emails and just communicating back and forth, and I think we had a phone call or two. And just to drop me like a bad habit because,
And, you know, we spend too much time not admitting that it hurts. Of course it hurts. How could it not hurt? And if you say it doesn't hurt, you're lying to yourself.
Yeah, when you go to the club and you go up to some guy and you're like, hey, can I buy you a drink? And he shoots you down. Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah,
they say you get right back up, find the next guy. And yeah, that hurts. Well, I'm done through all of those hurts. I've never once got a phone number from anybody. I guess I'm too short, too fat, too ugly, too freckly. I don't know what it is. But I'm just not many people's type. I get that. I get online. I check people there. I have great friends that don't know what I look like. They love me for my personality, and we've gone for years, and we've never seen each other. And that's fine. So I have friends that accept me for who I truly am.
Right.
But then I put myself out there on Grindr, or OkCupid, or One True Love, or you know, any of these other sites out there. Even FetLife. I get ignored a lot on FetLife.
So does a lot of people. Don't worry about it.
So John,
but that's part of the thing is gay submissive. These are the things that I like. I try to do, you know, be very explanatory of what I'm interested in. When you know, here are my limits, and here are my, you know, here are the things I'd like to do. I've joined up several groups. I help communicate with some of them. I ask them questions every now and then, and I try to network with these people. And I get friend request rejections. I get people that don't want to talk to me after they see my profile. And I'm like, really? That shallow? So it's even in our community, it's still, you know, either BDSM, you know, this group is comprised of all shapes and sizes and looks and skin colors, and, you know, various degrees of attractiveness on the spectrum. And it doesn't matter. You know, you're all friends. You know, I like seeing you. It's my second time. I like seeing you all here. You know, and I
And I like seeing you here too. So keep coming on back. We'll go over here to John.
Well, I just wanted to say, in response to online, I think basically whenever you, for the most part, 99% of the time, anytime that anyone says anything about online, the word objectification should just be inferred right along with that. You know, basically it got down to with me, I have my picture on my profile, I'm very clear about what it is that I want and don't want, like and I don't like, and then, you know, that eliminated hours and days of people going like, oh, well, I didn't know this, or I didn't know that. And, you know, you go on Adam for Adam, and you can ask, you can find a half black, half Asian, amputee, shemale that's got a patch over one eye, and it's HIV positive. I mean, you can drill it down to a point where you'll find that one person that exists in the entire world that's this person. But, I mean, that's basically online, just, you know, other than maybe some of the OkCupid and stuff like that where it's a little more dating geared, don't ever look at Grindr or Growler or Scruff or Adam for Adam or any of those and expect to find love.
Looking for love.
It does happen rarely. But that's not what it's there for. As much as people might try to say that it is, the people that are going on there, the vast majority of them are looking to hook up.
And Johns are a couple.
Yeah, and then, you know, even people that say looking for friends only, that's a really creative way of saying I'm putting that out there so that I can pretend like I'm looking for friends, so I can only hit on the people that I'm actually into. So it's online, it is objectification.
Enter at your own risk.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
JP.
Okay, well, I just wanted to bring it into this group a little bit because, you know, there's a lot of leather groups and a lot of leather people who have this Tom of Finland image.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very powerful. And I love Tom of Finland. I got the big book. I love all that. And there's some guys that can really do that. But I think what's so great about this group is that we're, you know, recognizing that everybody has kink and fetish. And you can be any age or size or looks or whatever. And you know, be accepted and be part of the group. And that's what I think that's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hi, it's me again. I just wanted to add, besides the Craigslist thing of everybody being bisexual and wanting to get their ass fucked, there's also this weird thing with straight boys all want a sheep boy. In speaking of how to reach out and getting rejected and whatnot, but I don't think we would have connected until we were both wrapped up in the pool. But I can tell you, I'm not really one of those people that's a little bit of a mini dom. But as you were just floating there, I thought, what's he gonna do?
Right.
And until Kobe just looked at me, we're floating, he goes, go ahead, buy his toes. I'm like, I don't do toes.
You do now. Exactly. And that's what this group is about. It's all us coming together with our hearts and, you know, with integrity and communicating to one another. And yeah, there are images out there, and to each his own, you know, and it's some self-responsibility to take for that too.
Right.
I mean, I get that. Being a black man, and when I was a firefighter, everybody wants to fuck a damn firefighter, you know, it's like going to, and I'm saying that on the real tip, you know, you go in the grocery store, and it's just like people just falling all over, you know, we're in there shopping, you know, and I'm retired, and I do it now. I see a firefighter at Henry's, and I follow around, and I want to start up a conversation, and I want to do all that, and I get the thing, too, you know, white guy sized me up and think, you know, I got the dick that's falling down the stairwell.
Right.
And I giggle because I have a blower. I don't have a shower. You know? However, with that, I can put that in context where I can, I get the whole thing about being humiliated or looking like, you know, Mandingo and all that.
Yeah.
However, I try to take that energy and shift it and take it like, well, you know, I'm desirable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it makes, you know, and I'm checking myself, you know, mm-hmm. checking it out, and I'm getting a response, and I like attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then the self-responsibility is that I have to take it, if somebody's taking it to that point where they want to be objectifying me in a negative way,
right.
then I have to take care of that. I have to nip that in the bud,
right.
and that's taking time to do that.
Exactly.
And I do it not only with firefighters, I do it with bearded guys and, you know,
mm-hmm.
large guys.
Mm-hmm.
I do it everywhere, especially feet. I mean, I can't stop looking, you know, at guys' feet in the store and,
mm-hmm.
you know, or anywhere. I think all of it's sexy to a point.
Right.
And I'm here to keep exploring that and taking a look at that. And it increases my self-esteem, and it brings out some wildness, too. You know, it's like instead of being tamed all the time, it's to be wild. And I'll go to the next to you. With you said that a little bit of your sadist came out, a little bit of your dom. For myself, I got it all inside of me. And it doesn't have to be a one-trick pony.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like it depends who I'm mixing my energy with,
mm-hmm.
and it comes out. You know, I prefer dominant, you know, but it comes out. He and I play, I'll suck his dick, you know, because, shit, I like the feel of having a fucking dick in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes and it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love dick. I love dick.
So,
all right, so.
Hold on. Just one more thing.
No, wait. Okay, quickly.
In regards to all that, it's not that I don't love my grower not shower, because there's nothing that can a boner never lies. But it is so much a sign of respect when it loves somebody.
Yeah, I would agree. Ariel.
Well, that's the other thing, where you, if you are desirable in a sense, in a way, that sometimes you are, from a public view, you sometimes are desired in the way that you don't want. In terms, I just came up with the term with projected objectification.
Right.
So people are projecting what they
right.
think you
right.
should be as
right.
an object.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's not how you feel.
Right.
Like
right.
for example, I remember I hooked up with this one guy, this tall, big guy. I was like, oh, cool, yeah. And he was cool, and it just was weird. He was like, I was like trying to get his hand to touch my dick, and he would not. I'm like, okay, that's strange. And like, I was just like, oh, so where's the mutual side of this? And he was like, oh, you're Asian. I thought you were just gonna bottom for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow! Now that's a classic. Right.
I just looked at it.
Right.
And I was like,
exactly.
I'm gonna go now. But
I think you're gonna fuck me.
Exactly.
And like,
right.
you know, yeah. So there's that side where if you're
right.
the one who
the
offering the drinks, yeah, that's. You know, and if you get turned down, it's cool. But there's also the other side. If you're the one getting the drinks, but why,
yeah.
or what?
Right.
Like, what do you see me doing for you?
Right.
And so sometimes the miscommunication of what am I objectified the
mm-hmm.
way that I want to be, or the way you want me to be?
Right.
You
know? Okay.
And
right.
so
right.
there's that side of it
right.
too.
Right.
Where if you miscommunicate it, it's not gonna work.
Exactly.
mm-hmm.
That's a great point,
Daddy.
I want to do something real quick, this little experiment, because I've heard people talk about, you know, I'm not pretty enough, or I'm too fat, or I'm too skinny, or whatever. First of all, and everybody's going to know this already, but men are dogs.
Yes.
Gay
yes.
men are more dogs than straight men.
I don't know
yeah.
about
so,
that.
So, I want to do this little experiment. Don't say anything, don't say a word. Everybody look around the room in a circle and pick out one guy you think is fucking hot.
Just one?
Just one guy in the circle that you think is hot.
Okay.
Everybody got it picked out, and not the redhead over here. You have to leave him alone.
he can play.
Okay, so now I want you, and I know this is going to be really hard for you because gay men are not dogs, but look around the room and pick one guy that you do not want to play with. Doesn't mean you can't be friends with him, but that you do not want to play with.
Okay, that's hard.
Okay, so now did everybody pick a hot one and a not so hot one? Did everybody find something?
Yes.
For
myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pick yourself.
Okay.
The point I want to make with that is not everybody is beautiful. Some people
It's hard.
Don't look at Tommy as being hot because they're older guys and they're like, oh no, I ain't dealing with a 21-year-old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Some people look at me and go, oh no, his belly's too big. No, mm-hmm. not good. So we all objectify our pick and determine people.
Right.
And I know a lot of people have had this experience, but I have had the pleasure in my lifetime of going home with some guys that are so fucking hot and leather, muscles. Oh my God, they're beautiful. And as soon as we got home and they open up their closet door, and I'm not knocking it, but they open up their closet door to hang up their leather jacket, there was enough gowns in there and wigs to last a lifetime. I'm not knocking that, but it was like, okay, you know what, whoa, this whole blew the whole fucking scene here. That's not the one. I've seen, you know, the expression, I'm sure you all heard it before, but he's so fucking hot till he opened his mouth and then
a purse fell out, right.
So don't, just because someone turned you down, don't take it personal. Mm-hmm. I know you do. I know we all do. Right. And I know that's just the way it is. But don't. Because for the hot guy that you found in here, and then the one that you weren't hot mm-hmm. for, that person may, you know, what am I trying to say? Go around and not be the same one.
Exactly.
So
for everyone.
You have to keep circling around. And another thing, no, I don't talk to anybody that doesn't have a picture online. So you need to knock that off, right off. If they don't have a picture up, I don't care if they're straight and have 8 kids. If they don't have a picture up, don't talk to them, don't waste your time.
But what right. kind of picture? Just a cock shot?
That movie
Grindr was really good at the festival thing, and it was all about, you know, cock shots and all that. So I don't know what kind of pictures.
Just look at general chat form. There was no
okay.
So
well,
check,
then ask them.
Check
can I see you sound really interesting. Can I see what you look like? I want to put a face with the name.
Yes.
And ask them.
Rod and then David. Did you hear
no.
Oh, okay. Right.
I spent the first half of my life when I was rejected, taking it personal, feeling sad, sorry, pity party, and then thanks. No matter what you think of her, to Oprah, I learned you have to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to love yourself to fuck with anybody else. If you don't love
it's
yourself.
True. How the hell?
So
love somebody else. Thank you, RuPaul.
So when people reject me online, whatever, my response back: your loss. And mine. You lost out not getting to know me, and I lost out not getting to know you. But you're lost because you didn't know the person I am.
Yeah. Exactly. And come back here and tell us about it. Let us love on you, and then we'll put you back out there and just keep going. Yes.
Well, I just want to say, and part of loving yourself is finding what makes you hot to yourself.
Oh.
And having, even if it's not amazing, overflowing Papa Tony confidence, if it's just, you know, hey, I'm a nice looking guy, and having enough confidence to walk through the room and say hello to people and not going, oh, he's way too hot to talk to, I'm not going to talk to that person. Just go say hello to them. And you know what, if you get rejected, you get rejected. That's them being a dick and that's their fault, not yours. At least you tried. But
right.
you know, more times than not, if you just take the little bit of confidence and just, you know, show that you're willing to make, you know, make that
mm-hmm.
step, a lot of times people will be more attracted to you because of that little bit of confidence
right.
that you have.
It's
I'm one of the most insecure people out there, but I say hello to a lot of people and people think, oh, he's just, you know, he just is, you know, totally fine. I'm like, no, inside I'm going, oh my God, I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to hide in the corner.
Right.
It's so interesting because I see you as very strong and very confident, and I was thinking about it tonight. I was like, look at him. He just commands
that's the truth.
Just there's so much strength there. And I was thinking, oh God, I wish I had that.
Right.
You know? So it's interesting.
That's faking it until I make it.
Well, you've made it. You've made it to me.
Yeah.
So I just wanna share an experience that I had to kind of bring closure to this. So at the play party on Saturday, I really never get naked in front of anybody, okay? And I was talking to Jerry, and Jerry was saying it was the one night I wasn't taking pictures. So he said, you really got to get out there, and, you know, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do anything. He said, I'll hold your hand, and I'll bring you in. So we went in the garage, and we started playing around with Ed and Kobe, and Ed was getting the electric treatment, and you know, Jerry kept saying, yeah, you're gonna have to try this. And he was planting the seed in my head, and I said, okay, well, if I do get on the table, I'll take off my shirt. And then he goes, no, you can't just take off your shirt. Why? Because your legs will miss out on a... Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to stay in my boxers. And he's like, okay. But I'll be right there. And all that kept going through my mind was, I can't do this, and I don't want to be judged. And then at the very last moment, he says, just take them off. And I was just looking at him, and he's like, just go. And I did it. The whole experience, I had my eyes closed because I couldn't look out at people. But it was actually one of the best experiences that I've had. It was really, really great. And, you know, part of coming here tonight was like, oh, my God, I'm going to see people that, you know, yeah, exactly. And... but truth be told, it was a really, really good experience, and I may get naked again, you know?
Yeah. And I was there cheering you on.
And you were there cheering me on, exactly.
Yeah. What you don't realize is people will judge you if you keep your clothes on. Because now I'm judging you because you're not getting naked.
Huh.
Because I'm judging, well, he's not comfortable with himself.
Right.
He's got low self-esteem.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. So you're going to get judged no matter what.
Yeah.
So just fucking have fun.
Just have fun.
And start out slow. If you're uncomfortable with it, wear a jock strap. Okay, if you're worried about your butt, wear a pair of the boxer briefs.
Yeah.
Get the shirt off,
yeah.
Get the pants off, just run around in boxer briefs at a
yes,
play party.
Yes,
that's
yes,
fine.
Yes.
And then and baby steps. And then slowly go, okay, you know what, my ass is like. But the bottom line is, you know what, I have this, and if I want a six-pack, I can go to the gym and do it.
Exactly.
But I don't want to, and I'm going to go home and eat me a cupcake when I get home because I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So those that looked around the room and looked at me and said I was hot, then you know what?
Okay.
That's all of me. That's what I am. Those that looked at me and go, no, he's too fat. Just keep going. Keep moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep going around the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's the point I'm trying to make. It doesn't matter if you're beautiful or if you're, you know, no one's ugly, but,
mm-hmm.
It's the taste. Everybody's taste is different.
Yeah, exactly.
And the sooner you know that and learn that, the disappointments, you know, will not. Because I'm not that gorgeous either. He keeps telling me I am.
Yes, you are.
He's lying. But no,
you are.
You're a gorgeous
man. The point
man.
is because I've heard a lot of people. There's a lot of hurt here, and I don't like that. And
yeah.
I want to help you with that. It doesn't mean I love you, but it's Daddy wants to help you find yourself, feel good about yourself, and move on.
And
you
I
need to,
yes,
need to
and I want
to
do that. I want to do that too. And this is a little bit off topic, but it's the same topic. Kobe at the play party. And I was walking around, and I remember I asked you, what's up with the pig on the wall?
Oh,
yeah. So Kobe had a chalkboard in the shape of a pig. And I said, what it is? He said, well, people can write their desires down on the thing. Along with taking boxers and trying the boxers on to come out of your clothes,
mm-hmm.
That was a really good idea. And the next demo play party, it's about, and I had one of these talks up at Treasures and Pleasures. Remember it was called Ask for What You Want? So we'll do that the next time. We may have something like some 3x5 cards, and you just see, huh? And we're bringing the pig. And you write down three things that you desire, what you want to do, and who you want to do it with. You might not get it, but at least you're getting it out of the crazy,
mm-hmm.
my crazy monkey mind,
mm-hmm.
you know, telling me that I'm a piece of shit and blah, blah,
yeah.
blah, and we'll get it out. You'll have it in writing, and then you could give it to the person who you think, and they could say yay or nay. So we,
you know, the other thing I was referring to after the party is that I know everybody has body issues, but I always thought women were bad, but geez, you guys.
Yeah,
but
we're worse.
We don't have enough opportunity to be naked with one another.
Yeah.
That's number one.
Yeah, right. It's true.
Uh-huh.
So we need to have more parties. That's what
yeah, absolutely.
By
yes.
the
way, absolutely.
The
demo things, you're welcome to get naked.
Yes. Oh yeah.
When we're at Slave Keith's,
you guys can take all of your clothes off.
Our boxer briefs.
Boxers or
yeah.
Or whatever.
And it hasn't
you have to wear clothes.
Right, and it hasn't been said. It was like a... an assumption, but it'll be said. It'll
yeah.
be said. Rob, we're going to wrap up.
Because it talks about being handsome, beautiful, whatever, and this is a true story. At a big party in Hollywood, and Elizabeth Taylor sat in the corner because every guy thought, oh, she doesn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
She's
yeah.
way too pretty
course,
for me.
Yeah.
And for her, sat in the corner, and nobody was talking to her.
Some of the most gorgeous guys are lonely creatures.
I'm not worthy enough to even go over there.
He's waiting for you for me to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
David, can we use your cap? We need to pass we're going to pass the hat. Thank you so much. The church is so graciously let us be up here rent-free and to give an offering. And at the end of the month, we collect everything and we give it to the church as a token of appreciation and gratitude for letting us have this place.
Right.
Here.
Right.
So
I
contribute.
Well.
And while you're reaching deep, I want to acknowledge you had some concerns about what you was doing here, and it turned out good.
Yeah.
All right, and I thank you for trusting me,
yeah.
trusting the group,
excellent.
And we had a really great conversation, and it was really good, Mike. So let's give it up. Yeah. Along that note, let's tell a friend that we're going to get it up. I think for next week, what I've learned, John, we'll have to get together and get like a picture or visual, like those pictures you put up with us. I'm in the middle talking, and those other pictures to give a visual to the next topic or something like that.
Yes.
And next week is going to be JP is doing spirituality, BDSM, and kink. So tell somebody, bring somebody, and we're going to have another round, another couple of hours of mingling with each other and having
and
a good
our
time.
Boxer briefs,
and,
yeah,
bring,
right.
and bring your boxer briefs, and then we're going to have the restraint demo party after that. So let's mingle for a little bit, kick it around, put some money in the hat, and then we'll put, let's put the room back. Right. And let's put the chairs back. I'll be found one. And that's it.
Here's the hat. Here's the hat. Here.
Oh, yeah.